Would you please join me in the prayer of illumination as printed in your bulletin? You spoke, and the disciples were immediately ready to follow. Speak to us today in our minds and our hearts, through your words and through this community. Speak to us today, gracious God, and we will follow. Amen. The gospel reading this morning is from the book of Mark, chapter 1, verses 16 to 20. Jesus calls the first disciples. As Jesus passed along the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the sea, for they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Follow me, and I will make you fish for people." And immediately they left their nets and followed him. As he went a little farther, he saw James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John, who were in their boat mending the nets. Immediately he called them, and they left their father Zebedee in the boat with the hired men and followed him. Herein is good news.
Okay, a conversation about following Jesus, being born again, salvation.
And life, the universe, and everything.
It's quite a fascinating passage, this just few short verses, what happens into them. I'm going to just pull up it's a scholar's version, which is a new version I just have happened upon. And just go through it and we can comment on some of it. But it's quite fascinating what happens in these few short verses. So as Jesus was walking along by the Sea of Galilee, which actually is only referred to the Sea of Galilee in Mark mostly, a little bit in Luke and that, but mostly it's really known as the Sea of Gennesaret. Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Or the Sea of Tiberias.
They all mean the same thing. So he's walking along. And Jesus spots Simon and Andrew, Simon's brother, casting their nets into the sea, since they were fishermen. And Jesus said to them, "Become my followers and I'll have you fishing for people." And right then and there, they abandoned their nets and followed him. Now, if someone walked up to you and said, "Become my followers, and I'll have you fishing for people," would you immediately drop what you were doing and abandon what you were doing? Abandon your livelihood?
And not only that, right there and then.
Yeah. Not, "I'll think about it and get back to you tomorrow."
Mm-hmm. Mark is I'm not going to say a lot about Mark, other than the thing about the Gospel of Mark is it's the shortest gospel. It's also the oldest of the four Gospels. And the wisdom is the more to the point, the more original and historically accurate it is. The longer it gets, the more embellished it gets, probably the younger the story or the later the additions to it. So what I like about this is we've got to the heart of the matter right off the bat and right then and there. Now that's another thing about Mark that's quite typical, is that everything in the Gospel of Mark happens right then and there, immediately. Immediately this, immediately that. It's compelling, it's an imperative, it's a command, it requires action in the moment. And there's no time to think about it, because before we've figured it all out, Mark is already on to the next part of his agenda. So, right then and there.
But to think of how, what Jesus' presence would have been in that, like how he presented himself, how he spoke, that with just those few words, he compelled. You know, it was just like Simon and Andrew could do nothing but say yes in just those few moments.
And this is what's compelling to me, is that in that transaction, The gospel makes very clear what the intention is. The presence of God, the presence of the call, the presence of a much deeper purpose, the presence of being invited, I like the word, compelled into something new, it's huge. It's actually it's quite huge. So the thing I want to add to that is, what is the content of this? What is actually going on here? And I'd like to submit that what we're experiencing in Mark, in his telling of this story, is something that is revealing the overwhelming nature of God's love. So much so that what is happening in this transaction is the beginning of a revolution of love. A revolution of love.
The other thing, you know, the whole image of fishing for people, we associate with Jesus, but what I hadn't realized or remembered till I was working on it this week is that actually that image comes up in both the prophet Jeremiah and the prophet Habakkuk in the Hebrew scriptures. And they talk about fishing for people, God fishing for people, really God going after people who are trying to avoid God. And so again, this sort of compelling thing, God's going after us. This is not about, you know, putting out an advertisement and seeing who's going to show up as disciples, applications you're going to get. This is Jesus going after. So then we go on. When Jesus had gone a little farther, he caught sight of James, son of Zebedee, and his brother John mending their nets in the boat. Right then and there, immediately, he called out to them as well, and they left their father Zebedee behind in the boat with the hired hands and accompanied Jesus. Poor dad.
So, back to the word compelling. This is, what if I were to stand here. We have a fly fisher in the sound booth this morning, so this is going to be a terrible impersonation of that. But if you ever watch The Grace of a Fly Fisher, there's a real technique of letting go of the line as you spin it out and spin it until you can cast. So I'm casting to the back row. And then we start trolling, we start bringing it in. So what I really like about this is that imagine that's what God is doing in the most grace-filled, compelling way, is letting out the line and going after God's people and bringing them in, because there's nothing better than being reeled into God's presence, into God's love.
Well, that might be a question that we each ponder this week, is how is God reeling us in? You know?
Oh, I know. There's a banquet next Saturday night. Boy, oh boy, you know.
You never know. God works in mysterious ways. Yeah. So here we are, 2,000 years later, following this fellow who preached for three, almost maybe 4 years, who went around, just, you know, had this presence that compelled people to follow him. Now he's got four followers. They've abandoned, Simon and Andrew have abandoned their livelihood. James and John have abandoned their father.
And the hired hands.
And the hired hands. Good thing there's a hired hand there. And off they go. Now, we know they're in the area, and there's probably still connection there, but basically they have at this moment said, my whole life is going to follow the way of this man, of Jesus. And so, and that's what people have been doing ever since, is giving their lives to follow the way of Jesus. And I mean, if we think of, you know, if you try to distill to the essence what the way of Jesus is, and you were hinting at it, but it's this radical revolutionary love that, you know, God, Jesus says, you know, love God, love your neighbor, love yourself, but also love the stranger, welcome, show hospitality to the stranger, and love your enemies. And it's not about any, there's no judgment in there. There's no evaluation of, is this person worthy of love? Have they done the right things? It is this giving of love that he is calling his disciples to imitate. And that's what you see as the early Christian community comes out. And how they start going out. And I think, again, it's what compels people is this radical revolutionary love that Jesus preached, not only preached, but lived. He was constantly, you know, going to the lepers, the prostitutes, the tax collectors, people who were not considered very good people in society or very, very, you know, upstanding members or center of society. And there's this, you know, he got himself killed for that. And yet, here we are saying, yes, we'll follow you, responding to Jesus saying, become my followers. I mean, we're here because in various ways we have said, yes, I'll be your follower. Here we are.
I wonder what it would feel like if we imagined ourselves literally being caught up in God's love. I've never had a really positive image of a net before, but what if the notion of being caught, of being gathered in, so that as the net comes closer, we come more and more fully into the awareness and the presence of God's radical revolutionary love. So that's one image that I'm playing with this week.
Usually you think of the net as sort of a place you're tangled up and you're stuck, and but it could be
it's casting it.
But it could be also that when we're feeling vulnerable, it holds us, so we don't have to hold ourselves. Mm-hmm. That there's a place to lean, to rest, to be held with others so that we're not alone. So, though, you know, you can flip the image so it brings that more comforting
nuance to it. And the other image is pulling out the immediacy, the right then and there energy of the gospel, which is, it's an imperative to be attentive, I think, of the decisions that we make on a daily basis. What decisions do we make, and how do we make them based on the foundation or the notion that we are practicing God's radical and revolutionary love, that's what embraces us and holds us and forms the foundation of who we are as a people of God, living together in community, one with the other, each with an invitation to cast the net.
Yeah, so it's not just us being, but it's us then reaching out.
Yeah, reaching out to
the first, I mean, just thinking of the first followers, they called themselves people of the way, followers of the way. It was the way Jesus lived that what was compelling. That was what drew people in. This was different than the society around them, the Roman occupation. It was the way that Jesus lived that compelled people, drew them in to him, reeled them in. And so they called themselves people of the way. And so it's like, how do we practice the way? day by day. And it really is, you know, we sang, I have decided to follow Jesus. I get to put words in your mouth. And but we are here because there is something that is compelling to us. I have decided to follow the way of Jesus. And what does that mean? And I was trying to think, you know, it's really about every part of our lives. How does this permeate every part of our lives? I think in our family, you know, meals. I mean, Jesus loved eating meals. If you look at the number of times he was sitting with people eating, he did that all the time. And so I think for us, in coming, you know, out of some of our training at VST, the meal has become one of the ways that we follow the way of Jesus. So, you know, saying grace at the beginning, offering gratitude, acknowledging that, you know, we are blessed by these gifts and that we have a role in blessing others with our gifts. And then the conversation around the table, being together to support one another, to listen to one another, to share not only in food that one of us has prepared, but also to share the conversation, to me is all part of practicing the way of Jesus. You know, practicing the love between one another and learning that love and learning about that love in conversation. So it's like every nuance of every little piece of our life becomes part of following the way of Jesus.
So before we wind up,
I got two.
You got more to go.
Just a little bit more.
Are you going to talk about salvation?
Yeah. Do you want to talk about salvation?
Oh, I know they want us to. I have a feeling. I have a feeling.
Salvation and being born again.
Yes.
The two key things, since I put it down on the paper.
Oh, my goodness. So, but I don't want to speak of salvation as the notion of being born again. This story actually is framed by a different context and a different conversation entirely. But what I think about when salvation, when I think of this story, is how the notion, the practice, the imagery that's in the gospel of fishing for people, which is really our part of our job, is really about offering salvation to one another. That there is salvation in the message of this story that's grounded and rooted in the Gospel of Mark. And salvation then, for me at least, understood in this way, is healing. It's the full sense of being healed by the presence of God that is completely whole. It's not categorical. It's not about healing my aching shoulder or my bad knee. It's about healing my whole self, emotionally, spiritually, physically. And by extension, healing the whole community. So when that net is being released into the sea to catch people, it really is, in my view, God's way of offering a whole experience of healing, of coming into oneness with who we are as individuals and as community. So the good news in that, if we think of salvation literally coming from salve, means to heal.
Like salve that you rub on a wound is the same root.
Exactly. So then what we're talking about here is the daily awakening and awareness to being held and healed by God's love, God's radical revolutionary love. And Susan and I are choosing to use those words quite intentionally, because this isn't like I love my cookies or I love my car. This is, we need to look at those two words, radical and revolutionary. Radical meaning going to the roots, and revolutionary meaning creating room for change and transformation. So I think that's That's how I'm framing for
me. Well, that's a good link into born again, because creating room for change and transformation. So we hear people say, I've been born again, and some of you may have had an experience that you would say being born again, but it's not language that we often use in the United Church. It comes out of a story in the Gospel of John where Nicodemus, one of the Pharisees, meets Jesus at night, and Jesus says to him, you must be born again, and that's where the language comes from. And often it's used to mean sort of a one-time experience where you're totally captured by Jesus and you give your life to Jesus. We don't tend to use it that way. We can have born-again experiences, but we don't tend to talk about, well, when were you born again, and ask for that one experience. I think in the United Church, it's about that ongoing transformation and that continues to happen in our lives. So for some of us, it might be that we were born and raised in the church and are growing and nurtured in the faith, and it's an ongoing process. For some, there might be that moment where you just know that understanding Jesus brought you to a new space of saying, yeah, I've been born again in this moment. My life has been turned around. And I know I'm on a different path, a different place. So both of those work for us, but we don't tend to focus on the born-again language. But really it is about the transformation, about, you know, the moments where it's just like, wow, I understand Jesus in a new way and understand Jesus' role in my life in a new way. And so I think, you know, probably I would talk about several different times when I could say that I was born again, where there was just a moment where I knew. But I think that doesn't happen for all of us. For some, it is sort of that gradual path because we're all different people. But just so that when you hear that word used and go, oh, I don't know if I'm born again, well, you get to decide if you're born again or not. You know, but that's how we would see it in the United Church. So, you know, but it's about saying yes to Jesus. And I think probably I say yes to Jesus every day, every moment. Like, it's a constant thing of how do I understand myself in the world? And what I know is the more I learn about Jesus and sit with the stories of Jesus, the more I want to follow his way. Because I think the world needs, today as much as ever, maybe more than ever, a radical love that is about loving stranger, loving enemy, welcoming, hospitality that is radical, that is not judgmental. And so for me, it is. You know, I have decided to follow the way of Jesus, and there's no turning back. I can't imagine life any other way.
Yeah, I'm not going to take away from what you just said. It's that's my story as well.
Yeah.
It's a daily decision. Sometimes I have decided to follow Jesus. You know, there's those crunchy.
It's not easy.
No,
it's not easy.
There's those crunchy moments when I have to remember that's the decision that I have made and am making. Because that's what creates the extra room I need in order to navigate those moments when it feels quite tight or claustrophobic.
Or just awkward moments. So, okay, I'll end with the swimming pool locker room. None of you were there. I walk into the women's locker room on my way to swim laps, and there's this conversation going on that is just judgmental and negative and racist and you know, as you walk in, like, I end up right in the center of this because everybody's around me, and they're, you know, and it's almost like they expect me to start agreeing, and it's not people I particularly know, but we see each other because we swim, and it's just like at that moment it is okay, I'm following the way of Jesus. And what I said is, that's not been my experience. And then I went on, because it was like, I'm not going to get in debate. I want to get in the pool and swim my laps. But I also don't want to leave it. If I follow the way of Jesus, and it was awkward. It was just totally awkward and uncomfortable. But I felt compelled to say something. And I, you know, so it isn't easy, but it's wonderful.
And we need it more and more, more and more.
Amen.
Amen.